Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of BAMS Radio. It's October the 24th, 8 o'clock in the p.m. I am Blip, one of the four horsemen of the BAMS apocalypse. Here with the regular crew, got Bama Bird on for the ride, Thomas Watts from Bama Hammer and Touchdown Alabama Magazine, and the one, the only CC Bama from BamaMag.com. Gentlemen, how is the tide rolling for you this evening?
Outstanding.
It's all good, baby.
Amari Cooper just caught another touchdown. I mean, wait. Oh.
Good one.
Oh, Thomas comes. The Rock comes out swinging. I love it.
I tell you what, guys. We are. I was talking to Mrs. Blip tonight, and she said, "Well, what do you have to talk about? You know, what are you going to cover on the show tonight?" And I went, "Well, we've reached a point of sort of equilibrium with the season where we can sort of look at the first two-thirds. Are we at the two-thirds mark? You know, halfway, just past halfway. Look at the first portion of the season and some of the games we thought were going to be difficult. We kind of slept walk through. A lot of people usually get their hackles up about the Tennessee game, and I had said last week, I just don't feel any kind of trepidation at all about the Tennessee game. And sure enough, you know, we went in there and took care of business, and it didn't look like we even broke a sweat, guys. I mean, am I alone in that? It seemed like an easy victory.
I don't think you're alone. Outside of a couple of big plays from Tennessee, or you know, even little misplays, it was a total domination. Alabama rolls up 539 total yards, and Tennessee sputters and sputters and sputters, and Alabama cruises to a huge win.
You're not alone, but Amari Cooper was a couple times.
Well, the wide receiver core as a group, you know, we'd worried about Kenny Bell's health, and I tell you what, Kenny looks pretty healthy to me. We had worried a little bit about Norwood's health. Norwood looks like he's close to 100% to me. You know, I think we're going to be firing on all cylinders coming into a game. And when is the last time? I know different polls, the coaches' poll, the BCS, the AP, different polls have them in different places. But I recall seeing Mississippi State in the top five in one of those polls, or not top five, top 10, excuse me. They're 10, 11, or 12, depending on who you ask. So let's call them a top 10 team because they're undefeated. When's the last time Bama went into a game against a top 10 opponent and was favored by 24?
I would say never.
I think it's so hyperinflated, it's not even funny, Blip. I mean,
it's ridiculous, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, either that or no one knows what they're talking about in the polls, because how are you going to have a top, let's say top 10, top 10, top 11 team, with that kind of point spread? I mean, is Alabama just that good?
I'm not a student of the bookie game, but my theory is that they were worried if they made it what it should have been, like 19 or 20, that too many people would jump on Bama early and get some of that.
Well, yes. And apparently Bama's been beating the crap out of Las Vegas with the spreads all season, so there is that.
The past 2 years, Alabama's covered all but like two or three times, and Vegas wants to make money. It's the short answer to that. So the lines are going to be high. I personally don't think Alabama is 24 points better than Mississippi State, but at the same time, Mississippi State's best win is either Troy or Tennessee, and otherwise they've played the Little Sisters of the Poor and local high schools for five other weeks. So,
well, let's cycle back to the Tennessee game then, because we won. Like I said, it didn't appear like we even broke a sweat. We won convincingly. Is Tennessee that bad? Which, you know, given their performance against Mississippi State and others, is possible. But I thought Tennessee at least showed up against Georgia. You know, they had a puncher's chance at the end of that game. And, Bird, you went to that game. Is Tennessee that bad or is Alabama that good?
Yes. My answer as well. I mean, but, you know, to give Tennessee credit, the four teams they've lost to are pretty daggum good teams.
Yeah. I mean,
they haven't lost to a suck team.
Well, Bert, I think your headset's muted. But the thing about Tennessee is they do have some injuries. Majit, their linebacker, one of their anchors, had a stinger, so he wasn't able to play at full capacity. They lost their best man in the secondary earlier this year in the Florida game to a torn ACL. I'm not saying that Tennessee is, you know, the walking wounded, but they do have a couple of key losses on defense that really precluded them from giving Alabama a very good game. The offense is still good. You know, we said it off air. Cordarrelle Patterson may be one of the best athletes in the country, and Justin Hunter, aside from that drop, he's a good wide receiver. It's just Alabama was able to affect the quarterback, which is a topic we'll talk about later in the show, to the point where Tyler Bray was unable to complete passes at enough of a clip to keep up with Alabama. And whoever let A.J. McCarron go, keep doing that. Alabama quarterback throws for 300 yards. Where the heck did that come from?
It made it look easy. Made it look easy.
Hey, how about did y'all see prior to the game the footage of the team walking in? How about the bow tie that AJ was sporting? I mean, big pimping from Mr. McCarron.
You know, I taught him how to tie that.
Yeah.
he's been actually wearing a bow tie. He wore a bow tie to Dallas, Blip.
I dug it the most. I thought it was awesome.
Well, I like the way Bird paid it forward. You know, Pee Wee Herman taught Bird. Bird taught AJ.
That's right.
AJ, he has. Bird's right. He's been wearing them all year, just about every game.
Every game, yeah.
It's like his new thing.
Yeah, and you know what? Any of you guys here on the show tonight want to know how to tie a proper gentleman's bow tie, I will give a class down at the tailgate this week on how to tie a bow tie.
Well, I sincerely hope that AJ wears a bow tie when he heads to New York. I'm not saying he's going to win the Heisman, but I'm going to make a claim right now that AJ earns himself an invite by the end of the year.
Yeah, he should be on the plane for sure. AJ versus Honey Badger, come on, give me a break. I mean, we've got a sterling record. He's putting up numbers, by the way, that are they're gaudy. Okay, they're gaudy. I was going to say not gaudy, but they are fairly gaudy.
Well, gaudy in their efficiency. He's not. It's not the eye-popping number of touchdowns that we saw out of Geno Smith. It's not the eye-popping number of yards that we have seen out of some of the quarterbacks in years past. But doggone it, if he's not a surgeon out there when it comes to efficiency,
he's very cool, calm, and collected. It's fun to watch him play football. You don't feel any time that the line breaks down and he is, you know, less than covered, so to speak. He just does the right thing. He throws it out of bounds when he needs to throw it out of bounds. He doesn't take the stupid sack. He doesn't force the ball into coverage. You can see that, I mean, whatever lessons he learned under Coach Mack and under Nussmeier have certainly taken him. I mean, the kid is fun to watch as a QB.
So that was that's a good segue, Bird, into one of my primary concerns going into the season was that transition. I was very, very high on Jim McElwain. I thought he was an exceptional coach, particularly when it came to the development of the quarterback. I thought he did a terrific job developing our quarterbacks and was really pleased with the progress that AJ had made under his tutelage. And I worried a little bit that we might take a step backwards in the transition to Nussmeier. And I think a lot of Bama fans cycle back to that point about, you know, it's really when you're the offensive coordinator at Alabama, Nick hands you a playbook and says, you know, put whatever salt, pepper, and spices you want into this, but these are the ingredients you're working with. And so from a play-calling perspective, we kind of knew what we would see on the field. But I've been very, very happy with the progress that AJ has made under Nuss's tutelage. I think it bodes very well. If Nussmeier can stay at Alabama for, you know, a 3-4 year run, something similar to what we got out of McElwain, then, you know, I think it's going to be a good ride.
I like what I see top to bottom, guys, on the offense. You know, but I will say this as a caveat, and I think you guys will agree with me, is that when you've got an offensive line as good as we have, except for DJ Fluker's ability to pass block, he seems to get beat all the time on with a good speed rusher. I think that O-line would make any mediocre offense look pretty doggone zippy.
I think you're right, but at the same time, you know, let's hit on Fluker. You mentioned his sometimes inability to pass block. Bleh.
Bleh.
The couple of times that Sinemore beat him around the outside, AJ McCarron got out of the way, you know, dropped a shoulder and got out of the way and completed the pass. So while I do think your point is very cogent, AJ McCarron has a lot of natural quarterbacking ability that shows through a lot. So I see what you're saying, but I think there's a balance there.
I think it's the perfect storm of a wonderful offensive line with a very seasoned and heady quarterback that has got terrific physical tools. Even being nicked up, I mean, he was able to run the ball last week when there would be a breakdown in coverage and he would have to tuck it and run. Did he look like to you guys he was favoring his knee at all? I thought this goes from a week ago when the boards were all lit up that he had a torn meniscus. I mean, you don't do that with a torn meniscus. He looked pretty darn good, guys.
I thought he looked better than good. I think he's hard to say if the knee bothered him at all because we don't know what the training staff did to prepare him for the game. You know, was it completely numb and he spent the next 2 days hobbling around campus, or is it the entire injury been overblown? We'll never know. But as far as performance on the field, he certainly looked like he was close to 100%.
Well, we'll know if they announce in January if he had minor scope or something like that. But we're not going to know before that, that's for sure. Robert Lester seems to be struggling with an ankle injury that he suffered. They say he looked better at practice Monday and Tuesday than he did today. So we'll be interested to see how the starting free safety from Foley, Alabama, does and responds to treatment between now and Saturday.
Yeah, I remember reading that today, that he was hobbling around and it appeared to be not just a step slow, but several steps slow. And Kerry, did they withhold him from any activities? Was he held out of practice and exercise bike only?
No, he was going through activities with a noticeable limp, is what the people that got to stay the 7 or 8 minutes they stayed each day this week said.
Okay.
This was a very, very limited week for media viewing. Nobody got to stay more than 2 periods, from what I understand. And I think the longest day was 9 or 10 minutes. The average was 7 or 8. But, no, he wasn't on the bike. He was going through the motions of the defensive back drills, but he was limping like between drills is what they said. And they said the limp was worse today than it was Monday or Tuesday. So that's not a good thing to hear. But at the same time, if Robert needs to be rested a little bit Saturday, there are people that are beginning to step up behind him that could probably fill in. You just hate to have a veteran leader like that that makes a lot of the calls back. And now, Vinny can make the calls, don't get me wrong. Vinny's a coach's son, and he knows Alabama's defense as well as anybody that's not a coach. So, I'm saying all this, Robert's probably going to be fine. It was just interesting to hear that the limp was worse today than it was early in the week.
Yeah. I'm speaking of the safety position, one interesting thing that I read on the message boards this week was that young Mr. Williams, Eddie Williams, is really starting to catch some of the coaching staff's eye. And he was on the scout team mimicking one of the Tennessee players this past week, but he's back to wearing his usual number 15. And they expect big things out of him. And the combination of him and Landon Collins in the future, wow. We're in very, very good shape, and I think that we'll see some of those younger guys get a chance to play in the coming weeks. I mean, they've certainly seen a lot of the field already this season.
Yep, and Ha-Ha as well. The future of safety looks really good right now.
We're just spoiled, guys.
Yeah, we are.
We're just spoiled rotten.
Well, and you know what? It's been a long time coming, and it's absolutely fun to revel in this. I've said this for 3 years. Saban doesn't rebuild; he reloads, and it's really obvious that, you know, he brings the players along the way he should bring them along. They play, you know, if they're freshmen and they can play, they're going to play, and it's not out of need or necessity. It's just if you're the best player out there, and my gosh, he's got 2 to 3 deep. You could take our third string and probably be reasonably competitive, if not in the SEC, in ACC or certainly Conference USA. And our second string, well, I'm dead serious. And
oh, I know you are. Yeah. I'm laughing because it's true. It's funny because it's true.
And you could take our second string, who hones the edge of the sword of reason, you know, down in Tuscaloosa in practice every day, and those guys could probably be another top 10 team. I mean, it just blows my mind. Well, you know what? We should probably break it, and then when we come back, I know that Rock, you probably got stuff about Tennessee you want to talk about. I know Kerry has tons to talk about. I want to circle back to Tennessee a little bit before we really jump in with both feet on Mississippi State. And you are listening to BAMS Radio from high atop Bluff Park, Alabama. Well...
on the planet to give you in-depth insight to Bama football.
AG, Blip, and the Bird.
Bring the lumber.
How is you doing? This here is Shirley Q Liquor, honey. Last night, me and Watusi was sitting up reliving the old days when we used to have the moonshine steals. You remember that, Gus? Way back yonder up in the hills of Tennessee. You know that the corn won't grow at all on Rocky Top. The dirt is too dirty and rocky by far. That's why all the white folks on Rocky Top drink their malt liquor from a jar. Men's is all ignorant up there on Rocky Top. Ain't one of them got their liquor sense. Oh, Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home for me. Good old Rocky Top. Rocket Top, Tennessee. Come on, song, girl. Rocket Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. I love moonshine liquor. Rocky Top, Tennessee. Yes, honey. Girl, you know we crazy down there when we get to drinking.
I could listen to that 100 times and laugh every time.
Oh, we didn't get it on last week, and you know what? It Tennessee week carries over for me. It's an all year thing, so I just I thought for your edification, Blip, that I would get Shirley Q singing Rocky Top tonight.
I was still grinning ear to ear Monday night. I was at supper Monday night, and my wife said, "Why are you giggling?" I said, "Cause we stomped Tennessee's ass."
Yeah, it was a mud stomp, and it was a thing of beauty. And you know, do you guys think that before you start doing the bounce around thing, Blip? Do you think Dooley's going to make it to the end of the year, or are they going to go ahead and just say, "Sayonara, pal"? Which loss is it that's going to push them over the top? Or was this the loss that pushed them over the top?
His last chance, and this is an extraordinarily extreme stretch, is if he somehow manages to beat South Carolina in Columbia. If he loses this week, it doesn't matter what he does. He's just gone. He's done.
You know, I think it depends on who you listen to. There are strong drums beating on the interwebs that a huge offer has been made, and depending on who you listen to, that it's already a done deal and the terms have been agreed to and offers accepted for John Gruden. And I know that, you know, blah, blah, blah. We've heard it for how many years in a row now, that John Gruden to Tennessee, but boy, the pumpkin humpers are really, really on it this time about they genuinely believe that the powers that be have executed a deal to hire John Gruden as the next Tennessee coach, which, you know what? Great. Bring it on.
I agree. I mean, you know what? I love to see a strong SEC. Give me every quality coach you can find, throw them into the mix. And let's face it, beating people 45-10 while satisfying is just not a lot of fun. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I mean,
oh, pish.
Pish posh. Pish,
I love it. Give me 30-point victories all season long.
Spoiled. I'm spoiled. So.
Okay, so let's real quick, before we get to coaching carousels and rumor mills and all that happy stuff, let's do the Blips bounce around the Bama blogs, because we take a quick pulse of the websites that we all follow and some of us even work for. Let's start over where Kerry works at BamaMag.com. And I actually like this approach because, like I've already said, we're kind of in that season, in that portion of the season where we look at the first two-thirds of the season and go, we killed everybody. Big deal. And we've got some exciting games coming up, but the headline at BamaMag.com right now is a neat article called Early Look 2014 Defensive Offers, and basically sort of conceding the fact that the 2013 recruiting class is, you know, we've got three, maybe four slots left, and then that's going to be wrapped up, and the coaching staff has already moved on to identifying targets in this current crop of juniors and the 2014 recruiting class, and Bama's already got their I's dotted and their T's crossed on who they want and who they've offered and who they think is going to be big time. And so that's if you've got access to it, very cool article over at BamaMag.com called Early Look 2014 Defensive Offers. Definitely would recommend that. Over at TideSports.com, the Tuscaloosa News guys and Cecil Hurt, they've got Cecil's SEC Power Poll from Week 9, and guess what? If you were to read it, none of it would surprise you in the slightest. TiderInsider.com, a couple of notes from Wednesday practice, and talking about this 2014 Georgia commit, Nick Glass, that's going to be visiting UA coming up here. So that's Tider Insider. Tower of Bammer, having some fun with Derek Dooley still. But that's, I think, an old article, and we might have even talked about that last week, the Tennessee fans becoming disappointed with season, so they get creative and drop a big rock from space covered with scribbles and graphics. Bama Hammer has got a Mississippi State breakdown written by John Mitchell. It's Alabama football breaking down the Mississippi State offense. And then a side note, an additional article over at Bama Hammer about Alabama men's basketball, which practice has officially started. And I took the time to sit down and watch Anthony Grant's press conference the other day. And I don't know if any of the three of you have seen that particular press conference, but what I took away from it is that Coach Grant appears more at ease, more natural, more calm and collected and confident than I think he's ever presented himself during his tenure at Alabama. I just get a very I think he's finally gotten rid of all of the bad vibes in the locker room, and these are his kids. You've got Andrew Steele coming back as a fifth-year senior that's going to set the tempo as far as expectations behaviorally, you know, in the classroom and then on the practice court. And I've got a pretty good vibe on what Coach Anthony Grant has got cooking for this season. Then over at 24/7 Sports at Bama Online, the top article being their daily briefing, breaking down practice, and that's where some of the intel as far as Robert Lester being a little bit banged up. In that article, they talked specifically about Eddie Williams being back at number 15 and in preparation for Mississippi State, and then a little bit of talk about some the men's and women's basketball starting practice. Volleyball's got a game Friday, and yada, yada, yada. So that's the Alabama blog. That's what we're paying attention to. And
How about some shout-out to our buddy Rock Watts? I mean, he's blogging out there. I mean, he's got good articles.
And, you know, self-promote, guys. Kerry writes over at Bama Mag, and Thomas is over there at Bama Hammer. Go ahead and no shame in that game. Go ahead and talk about your own stuff, guys.
Well, the big thing I spent a couple of days working on for Bama Hammer is I do a power ranking every week for the SEC, and just little blurbs about why I did what I did, basically opening up debate. And the big thing I did this week was I pushed Texas A&M up to number 5 in the SEC ahead of Mississippi State, and I dropped Georgia down to 7th after their completely atrocious performance against Kentucky. So, little interesting stuff over there. If you disagree with me, leave me a comment, and I will be glad to justify everything that I did, because there is a method to my madness, which might shock some people.
Or call the show. We'd love to hear from you if you disagree with what The Rock put out in prosaic style, and take issue with him right here on BAM's radio.
Kerry, what have you got cooking over at Bama Mag?
Well, I've been evaluating the hamburgers and the concession stands at all the high school stadiums in the area. been doing that for about 12 years now. Most recently with Oak Mountain. And they hosted Prattville this past week, and I was quite unhappy that on my 54th birthday, my dinner was an $8 quote-unquote value meal consisting of a burnt hamburger, cold fries, and a very good ice-cold Mountain Dew. So I kind of let them have it in my column the next day, but saw some good football players. I really like Cameron Petway, who's a junior. 6'2", about 220 for Prattville, runs about a 4.5 running back. I really like him a lot. It was a fun game. Oak Mountain won in the end. This is a down year for Prattville. Even if they win this week, their reward in the playoffs will be a trip to Crampton Bowl to face Jeremy Johnson and Carver. So they won't be long for the playoffs if they make it. But they have a lot of good sophomores and juniors on that Prattville team, of which people can read about in my columns at www.bamamag.com.
Well, I would be curious, Kerry, since you're so tapped in with the high school scene, I would be curious if you have any thoughts as far as the remaining spots in the 2013 class. Stock up, stock down, as far as who you think those remaining slots are going to go to, and I'm going to start us off on that with a stock up for Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara, after the Tennessee game, tweeted something like, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have it in front of me, basically tweeted, that's how we roll, who do we play next, hashtag Roll Tide Roll. And to me, That's what in sales we would call that a buy sign. I feel pretty good about Kamara coming in and him being more and more comfortable with the idea of playing slot. And I wonder if we get Alvin Kamara, does that close the door on Marquez White and that sort of force White to stick with his FSU commitment?
I don't think so. I think Marquez is open to receiver or defensive back. I know he's been preaching receiver these last couple of weeks, but I don't think that would necessarily close it. I think both those guys have committable offers that they would hold for him. But, you know, it's interesting that you brought Kamara up because he is visiting this week on an unofficial blip. The only official visitor is another guy who I think we may be starting to see his stock rise too. His stock is huge as a player, but his stock with Alabama. Robert Foster from Monica, Pennsylvania, Central Valley, will be taking an official visit this week. And it'll be his chance to see, you know, just how far away Alabama is from Pennsylvania, just how the family atmosphere works. And notice I said family, not family. But the family atmosphere among the team, and he'll be, you know, he'll have team people on the team he can talk to, receivers, coach, offensive coordinator, Coach Saban, that kind of thing. He'll be taking an official. The commitments will be there include Bradley Bozeman, O.J. Howard, who's having a monster year, Tyron Jones, who's having a monster year, Walker Jones, Parker McLeod, Darius Page, and also Jonathan Ford, who doesn't have an offer. He's a Vandy commitment from New Hope, Alabama, running back athlete type, about the same size as Kamara. And then we can go over the 2014 and 2015 list later because they're pretty long. A lot of visitors this weekend. One of the guys that really intrigues me, though, briefly, from the 14 class is a defensive tackle from Tucker, Georgia, who could also play offense. His name is Elisha Shaw. And I wonder if any of the three of you guys realize that two of the assistant coaches on the Tucker, Georgia football staff are a couple of guys named Todrick Malone and Terry Jones, Jr.
No kidding.
So we've got a word in with this kid. Tucker is a school that puts out players every year. They sent Patrick Pass to Georgia. They put out players every year. So if we can get a foothold in that school, we have it in the coaching staff, but if we can get a foothold in that school with a player or two, it's only going to be good. And that also brings back, you know, my whole thing about I'm really still standing by my prediction of Georgia beating Florida this weekend because I really want to beat Georgia in front of their recruits. So anyway. Oh, so what else you got? Roll time.
Man, that's good stuff.
I know. I bring the wood every week. Y'all have to admit it.
Colin Hillrich and Bradley. I mean, talk about bringing the lumber. That's Kerry Clark. You know what, Blip? It's 8:32. We can take a real quick breaky poo and be right back if you want.
Hey, roll it.
Roll it. I'm feeling sort of – and by the way, I'll put this out. I have got our special guest next week for the LSU game, one of those don't-miss additions to the show. Dr. Gold will be on with us to break down the LSU Bayou Bengals, their season to date, and what he sees coming up for the impending trip down to Death Valley.
As you got Eli?
Dr. Gold. No, this guy's better than Eli. He is the most coon ass of coon asses you will ever meet, and the guy is wired for sound when it comes to LSU football, and he's absolutely a stitch when he comes on the show. So let's break it real quick. You're listening to BAMS Radio. We'll be right back.
From Piatone, Bluff Park. BAMS Radio is on the air. BAMSRadio.com. All Bama, Bama, all the time.
Welcome back to BAMS. Thought we'd get you in the holiday spirit since Alabama has given us nothing but gifts all year long with, again, probably a season to remember. And it's getting to the point now where I'm looking more and more like, gosh, where am I going to stay in Miami when we go to the national championship game? And, Kerry, I hate to disagree with you, but I think Georgia has fallen back on their woeful times that they typically do under Mark Richt. This time of the season, it's kind of poop goes the weasel, and I think Florida is going to curb hole Georgia this coming weekend. It probably is not even going to be a game that's worth watching. I hate to say it, but
not so fast, my friend. So
that's an easy pick, but I'm going with the man up pick, and that's where Florida doesn't have a passing game, have not shown one.
That's true.
They're basically a Gene Stallings team, and yep. while he won, you could beat him. I was down in the swamp for a 31-0.
Yep.
So, I'm not saying this game will be that. What I'm saying about the Georgia-Florida game is that I think Aaron Murray is getting his act back together. He showed signs of it with four touchdowns against Western Kentucky. But if he gets Georgia out to a 20-7 or 21-3 or whatever, Florida's offense is not built to come back from that.
No, they're a pound the ball. They're a pound the ball.
I think Aaron Murray and his offense can outscore that mediocre Florida offense. It's basically got a mini Tebow running it. He's not the real Tebow, though, and he's young, and he's liable to have some turnovers. I realize that the easy pick is Florida because they're undefeated and they're playing tough ball and all that, but they don't have a senior quarterback that's played in three of these outdoor cocktail parties before this year. So my whole gist of all this is I want to beat Georgia in Atlanta in front of their recruits like Elisha Shaw and the other ones that will be there. That's my theory.
Well, remember last year, you know, Georgia came out of the gates, dropped one to South Carolina, dropped one to Boise State, and everybody went flush. There went Mark Richt. And then they rattled off 10 in a row. They got their shit together. So I can easily see – after a disappointing squeak one out like a hare in a biscuit win against Kentucky where, you know, all of a sudden the Georgia faithful are going, uh-oh, is this a splash of cold water? I could easily see Georgia rebounding and actually getting it together and ripping one off against. Now, I'm not saying they're going to blow Florida out. I think it's going to be a close, hard-fought game. But I'm with Kerry. I see Georgia coming and winning this game and making the East extremely interesting down the stretch.
I don't know, man. After watching them play Tennessee at their home field, I came away terribly unimpressed with Georgia, and they haven't done anything over the past two or three weeks to get back in my good graces, especially with the egg that they laid with Kentucky. This is just not a very good team. I'm telling you. I mean, it's I will tip my hat to Aaron Murray. I think he's a very solid quarterback, but their defense doesn't wrap up when they tackle. I think their defense is soft and porous. You know, literally, I was ready to head to the car when they had Tennessee down 30-10 or something like that in the first half, and then they allowed Tennessee to rally and come back and tie the score. You know, 30-30. That's 60 points given up between two, you know, theoretically top-tier teams, and neither one of them are that great. I mean, I got to – we'll see. You know what? Hopefully on Sunday night when we get back together again, you guys will be like, yeah, Bird, look what happened. Ha, ha, ha.
Well, and the other thing, Bird, I'd like to play somebody besides Florida just once in the SEC championship game.
Yeah.
Just once when we play somebody besides Florida?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I agree.
I realize that Florida's the sensible pick this week. I know it is. But I just got a feeling Aaron Murray's going to pull out that senior year great game.
I respect you too much to not at least, you know, whether I agree with you or not, I have to say, yeah, you know what you're talking about. But there's been nothing about the Georgia team that is exemplary to me, and I'm afraid that they're going to get steamrolled by Muschamp. I think Muschamp being a baby Saban, one of Saban's heirlooms running around, you know, propagating the world with assistant coaches into head coaches, that there's just so much of what you see on the floor of a Florida program that kind of mirrors to a degree what you see at Alabama. And that's, I got to tell you, man, what they're doing is right, and the way they do it is right. You win with defense and running game in the SEC, and that's just the way it is.
Well, let me just side with Bird here. Georgia really had their guts ripped out in the South Carolina game, and they completely laid an egg coming off a bye. Does Georgia have the raw talent to play with Florida? Absolutely. But I question the character and toughness of the team after watching them mail it in against Carolina and then 2 weeks later really fart around entirely too much with a Kentucky team that was on track to lose by over 50 to a John L. Smith-coached Arkansas team. I realize the transitive property is overdone in sports, but that's really, really bad.
Well, you know, we're split, so we'll see. We've got the once we've got a little bit of a brouhaha going here at BAMS as we all agree to disagree, and then we're right down the middle. Two of us are saying, yeah, Georgia, and two are saying Florida. And you know what? That's why they play the game. So it'll be – I'm sure that the setup will be down. By the way, we will be at the homecoming with the BAMS tailgate. Looking forward to having everybody come by and say hello to us. Please come by and say hi. We will have some good food, some good spirits, and have the other games around the – that are worth watching around the SEC on in the big screen – down at the tailgate. So please come down this week. Even if you're not going to the game, you'll enjoy hanging out with the BAMS crew. So
just because we're split, do the winners get steak and the losers get beans? Is that what we're going to do?
The losers have to wear kilts.
It sounds like Carrie's already had to eat beans for his birthday dinner.
It smells in here like Bird had them tonight.
I did a closed door session just a few minutes
ago. Yeah, the door must be open and the fan on or something.
Exactly.
Okay.
Out of the gutter, back to this.
You know what, though? The night before my birthday, I had a great meal at Bright Star. So there is that.
Well, nice.
Yeah. So the Friday night was kind of eh. I really shouldn't be at a football game, but I need the money. So when they gave the $8 dinner deal, I just jumped on it. You win some, you lose some.
Some, you lose some.
Well, I started the night before, more than made up for it. And then I actually got a free steak at Dale's Southern Grill with the birthday month promotion last night. So it's overall, it's been good.
How much time, if any, do you gentlemen spend over at ESPN.com?
Every once in a while.
Well, I read Greg's articles. I think I emailed you gentlemen one today. The Ozone, right. But then now ESPN.com, the non-Bama part of it, I basically just go there to get scores and look at NFL stats and all that. So for my time on that site for a week would probably be less than 15 minutes. But I do read Greg Ostendorf's articles on the Bama section of ESPN.com.
And I'm with you. I like Greg's stuff a lot. Let me direct you to if you go to ESPN.com, from the front page, I would encourage Bama fans to click on the NCAA football link to go to that section of the site, because the way the site's laid out, you know, they've got sort of a centerpiece article, and it's usually a big graphic. And the graphic, I think, sums up where we are in the college football season overall. The graphic is sort of a golden field with a sunset and a big lens flare in the background. And we've got defensive players from left to right. We've got a linebacker from Kansas State, one of the cornerbacks from Florida. We've got Monte Teau from the vaunted linebacker from Notre Dame. And we've got one of the players from Oregon. And it's sort of a shot from behind, so it looks like the defensive player, the view from behind the defensive player as they chase the quarterback. And what they're all chasing is the big script Alabama A behind the lens flare. And the article is all, it's titled Going for Two, and it says everyone is chasing Alabama. Who should be number two? And more importantly, who will be there at season's end? And then they basically break it down and say the Tide's toughest foe is. So essentially they are conceding the fact that Alabama is going to run the table, and saying who among these four, among Oregon, Notre Dame, Florida, and Kansas State, who of those teams has the ability to run the table and be there at the end of the year? And I think it's Thomas says Sturgis is the kicker. But it's an interesting graphic, and I think very telling as far as where we are in the football season. You know, but nobody's arguing who's number one. You hear zero debate amongst the talking heads as to whether Alabama is worthy or not.
Well, there's an occasional head talking head. Who's going to test Alabama? Alabama's going to be tested this week. Alabama wins by 30, so they're going to be tested next week, kind of thing. Now, if you wanted to talk about who will actually play Alabama, it's not going to be Notre Dame because Oklahoma's going to crush them this week. Florida might get a shot at Alabama in the SEC championship. I think you're looking at either Kansas State or Oregon, and K-State doesn't have much left in terms of really, really high-profile games. They've got Texas Tech this week, I believe. But Oregon's got Oregon State, who's number 7, USC, who's number 10 or 11, and Stanford, who's number 17. So
I tell you what, Thomas, that is the television network's worst nightmare would be a Alabama K-State national championship game.
Amen.
From a ratings perspective.
Amen.
Because everybody outside of Bama fans, everybody's tired of seeing Bama win. They want to see somebody different. And if it's K-State, they have no sizzle. There's no sexiness to K-State's program. I mean, big kudos to Bill Snyder for the job that he's done. But if they get there, I guarantee you the overwhelming majority of the country will just concede victory to Bama, and they go, Bama's going to crush K-State. In spite of what some of you may hear some of, you know, I think it was Herb Street the other day saying, well, K-State's a lot like Alabama. They're very balanced. And, shut up, Kirk.
God,
shut up.
The only thing K-State has going for it is a potential Heisman Trophy winner. They've got a wonderful little quarterback in Colin Klein. But outside of that, you know, give me a break, guys. I mean, look at the league that they play in. Here we go again. Is K-State the purple Wildcat wearing Mississippi State from further west? I mean, it's been a cupcake of a season for these guys.
Well, the only people that are going to tune in to watch that game will be the four of us and a couple of our listeners. I think the ratings will suck.
Well, you got Bama haters that will watch it, just praying that if we slip up.
The entire Auburn nation would watch it just so that they can watch us lose. And speaking of Auburn.
well, first off, you know, Heisman Trophy winner Colin Klein's been stymied by that Nick Saban defense. I'd have to listen to that from Brent Musburger again. It'd be great.
It's a mauling, folks. A mauling.
He gets knocked out of the game like the second series. Oh, if he hadn't got hurt, it would have been different.
Yeah, well, anyway. Speaking of getting hurt, how about Auburn?
Oh, man. Bird, you and I were sitting in Buffalo Wild Wings while that game was going on Saturday. And I said, I feel a little embarrassed to be pulling as strongly as I am for Vandy, but damn it, go Commodore.
Oh, and we were cutting Auburn no slack either, and there was a whole table of Aubie sitting right next to us. And you have to love my daughter. She leaned over and said, Dad, they're all Auburn people over there. And I looked at her and I said, I can't help that. I said, I just happen to be digging gold and black today. What can I say, you know? Oh, what a pathetic, pathetic team they have down on the plains this year. You know, we had talked first of the year when we went through the exercise of, you know, how many games you think they'll win. Well, it's obvious they're not going to win 6, okay? Period. They're not going to win 4. Are they going to win more than 1 this year? That's the question mark. Do you think, I mean, because Kerry and I were talking before the show came on, and the only gimme I think they've got is New Mexico State, and I think that they will probably win that one, but I don't think that the A&M game is a gimme.
Not a gimme anymore. It's one of the best teams A&M's had in their history. They kind of blew it against Alcorn a couple weeks ago, a very mediocre Alcorn team. But to my knowledge, that's their only loss. And they've got some confidence up in normal Alabama this year, which is outside of Huntsville, I understand.
So what does the Auburn faithful do? Do you sit and just and get shellacked every week and take it like a man and just, you know, put all your trust in Pat Dye and Jay Jacobs? Or do you go in and clean house?
Well, the rumor mill certainly has been interesting to watch when it comes to Barnageddon. I've heard everything from at one point Monday night, I heard that both Jay Jacobs and Gene Chizik were going to be shown the door, and that Brian Van Gorder was going to be the temporary coach the rest of the season while the coaching search went on. That sort of the air went out of that particular rumor balloon when Coach Chizik took the stand for his press conference this week. I mean, why would you, if you had fired your coach, why would you let him host his press conference? Jim Chizik's mother passed this week, and so he's dealing with some personal stuff. And I think the media kind of gave him a pass during the press conference as far as some of the tough questions, but I got news for y'all. It's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse. And if I'm an Auburn fan, I'm hoping that they make a change.
Well, when I wrote my power ranking I mentioned earlier, I legitimately dropped Vandy down one rank because they were supposed to beat Auburn worse. I can't believe I actually had that thought and was able to type it and not be a complete sham as a journalist or an individual. I do have to say, though, I respect the media for backing off of Gene Chizik this week because he's dealing with a personal tragedy. And it's not like the terrible questions are going to go away in 72 hours. So kudos to the folks not kicking a man while he's down on over such a thing, you know?
It doesn't matter where the terrible questions go, Thomas. The terrible answers are going to keep coming. He's got a script. Doesn't matter what you ask. He says SOS every week. It's, you know, if I'm Auburn fans, I'm not, thank God. But if I was, I am just begging somebody to hire Bobby Petrino and get us out of this trap and announce him in December so he can start recruiting. And there are rumors to that effect, just as there are that Blip mentioned about Gruden earlier. There are similar rumors about Petrino and Auburn, but there are also rumors about Petrino and Kentucky, so we'll have to see which comes to fruition first.
Do you think is it a race at this point for a team to put a bullet in their coach first? I mean, Joker Phillips, very few people expect Joker Phillips to survive the year. I think it's a foregone conclusion that Dooley is gone, and would Tennessee make a run at Petrino? Does he fit there at all? I mean, it's to some extent it's a race, and then you've also got, for obvious reasons, there are certain assistants that are hot names right now. I've heard Charlie Strong, who's having a hell of a year at Louisville. I think Coach Strong was a big part of Urban Meyer's success during his tenure at Florida. And he didn't come out of the gates in his first year as a head coach, as the guy in Louisville. He didn't come out of the gates hot fire, but he certainly got it figured out now, and it looks like he's got that team playing very competitive football. So Coach Strong's name all of a sudden becomes a hot button, and I've heard his name mentioned specifically in reference to the Tennessee job, but I've also heard Strong's name mentioned for Auburn.
I've heard it mentioned more for Arkansas than anywhere else.
I've heard Arkansas as well, Kerry.
Boy, that would be a good hire for Arkansas.
Oh,
they couldn't do any better.
Really couldn't. I mean, that would be the best move Arkansas could ever make. And they would be, again, remiss if they didn't have him on the a very large contract before the season ever ends.
Well, remember the triple extra large panties that got in a big old wad when Charles Barkley felt like Turner Gill should have gotten the job at Auburn. Let's point out that Charlie Strong is one of the more successful African-American coaches in the country. Boy, I sure do hope that Chuck gets his panties in a twist again, that Auburn didn't go after the black candidate like they should have.
I hate to be the dead horse or a dead eagle or whatever it is, dead tiger. But listen, the coaches that have been in the SEC for a number of years, like Charlie Strong was, they know the situation in Lee County, Alabama, and it's dictated by Patrick Fane Dye, wife beater, drunk extraordinaire. And as long as he's hanging out in that football building and coming to practice every day, somebody like Charlie Strong is not going to take that job. Somebody like Kirby Smart's not going to take that job. Petrino, yeah, he probably would deal with it. He would wait till they hired him, and then he would kick guys. Sorry, ass out of practice like Tuberville did, and good for Tuberville on that. But I'm telling you, Blip and Thomas and Bird, the people that know SEC football and these names we're bantering about do know it, are not going to put up with the crap that comes with the Auburn job. The only exception, I think, would be Petrino, who wants to get back into coaching bad enough that he would take it, and then once he got established and got all his stuff moved in and started spring training, then he would kick Pat Dye's ass out of practice. That's just my theory on it, though.
Well, hypothetical. Let's say that Kentucky wins that race, that Kentucky somehow figures out a way to cut ties with Joker Phillips, puts a strong enough package together to lure Coach Petrino. Are there enough resources there? Is there enough polish to put on that turd for Petrino to be successful in the East at Kentucky?
It would be interesting to see. He made Louisville a contender, and they're essentially recruiting the same area. So if Petrino could pull together, collaborate with John Calipari, I think he'd have a shot. But it is a really tall order. Florida's not going to go away. Georgia, kind of there today, gone tomorrow. South Carolina will be decent. Missouri is not going to stay down. So you're talking about one of the most competitive conferences in football. But if there's anyone that can do it, it's Petrino, because he's done that before to an extent.
I'm going to tell you guys, the he's not walking in. If he takes that job, he's walking into a cupboard that is loaded. He has got some great talent that are underclassmen right now that are not on the field. And whoever takes that job, Joker would be much more effective next year than he is this year, because he was left with little to nothing. He has done a good job of recruiting. He's put some good kids in that program. And I'm here to say that if Petrino does take over that program, it's going to be strong. So, you know what? We've got the King Crimson on hold. King, hang out with us for a second. We're going to go to break here in just a moment, and then we'll bring you back after the 9 o'clock break. Let's pay a couple of bills. Let's run an ad or two, and then when we come back, we'll bring King Crimson with us on BAMS Radio and get his take on both last weekend and this coming weekend. You're listening to BAMS Radio.
So, what makes BAM's tailgate so darn special?
Sunbelt Inflatable Tents can supply you with custom-designed tent for your tailgate needs. Corporations, businesses,
or just the most hardcore fans are the customers of Sunbelt Inflatable Tents.
Reach them at their website, www.sunbeltinflatabletents.com, and ask for Billy. Or call 251-247-1169 to order.
Oh, Bama! Hey, this is Leroy Jordan on BAMS Radio. Roll Tide.
Yes, sir.
Radio, man.
You got to love it. Welcome back to BAMS Radio. We are going to bring on one of our favorite guests and listeners, the king of college football, King Crimson King. How are you tonight?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Man, I'll tell you what. I feel like I've dropped off the face of the earth, King. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I know. I miss you, man. I hadn't been down. I just wanted to share a rumor, and you know how rumors are. You always hear them on Twitter and things, but I just heard a rumor that Gruden was seen at Toomer's Corner drugstore buying a pack of condoms about 2 hours ago. So I don't know. He may be the coach down there. I don't know. I'm just passing that rumor along.
I don't know whether to laugh or to...
First of all, if it was buying condoms, it would have been Petrino, not Gruden.
Well, somebody's going to get screwed at Auburn, is all I got to say. Because I have never in my life, as long as I've been following college football and loving on my Crimson Tide, I've kept up with Auburn. And this is pathetic. This is unreal. There's no leadership. There's division on the team. It's a sad case, and personally, I'm embarrassed. You're embarrassing me, because we play with pride here, and I don't know what the hell, what rinky dink crap, Gene Chizik. I think he's a puppet. I don't think he can make a move. I don't know. Who cares? You want to be in the bubble? You want to be in the spotlight? You want to be when the light's hot? Well, you got up there, and it's a little bit brighter, ain't it, Hall? So, you know what I got to say to Auburn? When Auburn fans say anything to me, it's hush. Just shut up and get your ass back in the woodwork. I had to get that off my chest. Next thing I got to say, we got a good football team, y'all.
Yes, sir.
A football team. We have got a great football team. I just got through watching the replay of the Tennessee game. Amari Cooper, I mean, what can you say? The ball's in there. It's his ball. He's going to get it, and he's going to do what it takes to get there and get it, and he is smooth as glass. The touchdown they called back absolutely looked like they were standing still and he was running through a drill. It happened that quick. Just amazed, just absolutely amazed at this kid's ability, and I'm excited about him. Well, let me ask you guys a question. What's the next media template on what our weakness is? Because we haven't been challenged deep. Nobody's thrown the ball vertical on us. You know what I'm saying? And that's all I heard. Well, they're going to go against Tyler Bray. Well, that didn't happen. So what's the next thing you guys think they're going to start bagging on us about?
Honestly, I'll serve the softball up. I don't know. There was an ESPN draft guy that did a breakdown of the Alabama-Tennessee game, and he said something on the order of, you have to take chances to beat Alabama. You have to bring an extra guy blitzing to try and force McCarron into a mistake. You have to throw the ball deep, potentially into double coverage, and hope you make a big play, because you can't line up against Alabama and beat them in the traditional way. From top to bottom at almost every spot, Alabama is better. So it's going to take some fluky, risky game plan to beat Alabama this year. Is it possible? Yeah. But you're talking an instance kind of like Auburn in 2010. There are going to have to be a lot of weird, funky breaks for Alabama to lose this year.
I got to give King a shout out because he's the first person from Gadsden I've ever heard use the word template. That was awesome. But on the question, no, but that's good, man. I mean, Cecil will be proud of that word. But on the question, King, the two things that I would think they would hype on would be DJ Fluker continuing to get beaten on passing plays, his man either sacking the quarterback or, you know, hitting the quarterback after he throws the ball, and the fact that despite all the changes they made, there's still at least once a game that we struggle on kickoff coverage. That's all I can think about, King.
Well, you know, I hear you on the kickoff coverage. What? Go ahead.
I said it's hardly a recipe for beating us. I mean, you can't say, well, you're going to beat Alabama on kickoff coverage.
Well,
like,
there's not a recipe to beat Alabama. You have to show up, play your best game of your life, and hope they play their worst. That's the recipe.
And, you know, I just keep going accepting the fact. I mean, when I go into a game, I'm nervous. I want us to do well, you know, and I'm, you know, looking at the game. But we got some talent, and you know what we got behind that talent? More talent. And it's just, I mean, and the message he sent it, I mean, Amari Cooper, I mean, true freaking freshman playing high school ball, showing out, letting everybody know you got what it takes. Come on down here. We'll showcase you, too. Because, I mean, it's scary, man, and I'm proud of it, man, because it was a long time coming. I know what it feels like. You know, and you know, like I say, this is good as it gets as an Alabama fan right now, and I'm happy with the way everything's going. I mean, we're going to get some great recruits, and I don't get nervous that bad anymore at football games because I feel like we got it in control, and everybody knows what it was like about 10 years ago, you know?
Yep.
So I'm proud of what we have. And I'm proud of our fans and our support. If you don't go, anybody out there that does not come down there and go to Tuscaloosa to a game, it ain't nothing but a freaking love fest. That's all it is. And it's great. It's got great electricity. Everybody's just in a great, I don't know, man. It's just special. So, I mean, you go down there and get hooked up and come by and see the BAMs folks. They'll take care of you, that's for sure. But listen, I'm going to get off here. I was enjoying the show, man. Good to hear y'all up again.
Yeah, we're rolling, and great to have you calling in, King. And, you know, I'm gonna expound on what you just said. I think as a fan base, we sometimes forget where we came from. I haven't forgotten. There were times during the Mike and Mike era that you know, you'd scratch your head and say, and even then though, I don't remember us ever being completely lethargic and not, you know, thinking that you were.
We didn't give up.
No, we never
gave
up.
We didn't give up.
And they were always usually semi-competitive. I remember Oklahoma was the number one team in the country, opened the season against Alabama, and there was no way we should have even been on the same field with that team. I mean, this was
great
there
game.
There was not a five-star recruit to be found on the Alabama sideline. Trust me on that. And those guys put on the crimson jersey, went out and comported themselves and gave Oklahoma all they could stand. And it's, you know, I don't know how much of that's tradition and how much of it is. I think it's all tradition. And I think a lot of it is the support of the fan base. But it's, you know, I don't feel like the orange and blue guys this year where I wouldn't even want to come out of my house. I mean, you know, you ran around and jammed me pretty good with Cambo the Scambo. And I actually saw someone with a
curse
shirt on.
Cam.
Well, you're going to love this one. She had who were the three Heisman? Pat, Cam, and Bo. She had a shirt, and that's all it said. And I said, no, you have to be really proud of old Cam because he went there for a full semester at your college, one full semester. And as soon as he got his NFL offer, he was out and gone. Well, he got us a national championship. I said, but he didn't get a degree, ma'am. He didn't go. But it was nothing more than a mercenary position.
Yeah, like, they didn't teach him how to play football at Auburn. That's what I keep telling. Isn't it like he come there and y'all show him, well, you got to do it. Like, Ken had it, man. Come on. It was a business trip.
Hey, and maybe one of the best football players I've ever seen. I mean, he really was.
Absolutely. And he looks like a big crybaby right now, doesn't he? Isn't it odd that both of their teams just suck major ass this year? What about that? It's the curse. I'm telling you, it's the curse of camp. And you know what? It's so much better than probation. I'll see y'all. Love y'all. Bye.
Peace out.
You know, to add to what King just said, I was kind of spoiled myself when I went to Alabama as a freshman in the fall of 77. Back in those days, 77, 78, 79, even 80, in 81. it never felt like we were going to lose the game walking into the stadium. It was quite the opposite. It was not a matter in your minds those days of what the result was going to be. It was what the margin was going to be. And I haven't been able to say that in 09 or 11. But this year, I've got that feeling back, where every game I walk in there thinking, okay, Alabama's going to win. I'm just not sure how much. They may struggle for a half or something like that, but they're going to win. And I haven't had that feeling in 09 or 11 every single week. Even in 11, I was afraid of LSU before we lost to them. Even in 09, I was afraid of them. In 08, going to Baton Rouge, all those years, we had Saban, we had great teams, but I never had that confidence in my mind that I had when I was a student in the late 70s and the early 80s, that walking into the stadium, whether it was Legion Field, Bryant-Denny, wherever, I felt like, yeah, we're going to win. It's just a matter of how bad we're going to beat them and how soon the backups will get in the game. I've got that back this year. And I don't want to say that I'm spoiled, because I don't live under I don't live in this fantasy world and drink this crimson Kool-Aid where I think that Alabama's never going to lose a game the rest of my life. They are. They're going to lose some games, but it doesn't look like it's going to be this year. You know, depending on how the NFL draft affects the team going into next year, specifically the quarterback, and I'm hearing mixed things about that. I now think there's a pretty good chance that he comes back. But regardless of what AJ does, there could be a loss down the road, but I don't think it's this year. Is there a scenario that Florida could sneak up on them if they win this week in Atlanta? Yeah, I guess it's possible. Is there a scenario that Oregon's high-powered offense could sneak up on them in a championship game? I suppose it's possible, but Saban would still have 30 or 35 days to get ready, and he doesn't lose games when he has that long to get ready. Well, the only time was Utah, and that was just a fluke among flukes, and it happened, and it's embarrassing, but I think that it was a stepping stone that the team used and learned from it. And, gosh, I didn't mean to talk this long, but I've got that confidence back that I haven't had since really the early 80s. Every week, confidence.
Kerry's preaching tonight.
Well, I'll be curious to take your pulse going into that night game in Baton Rouge.
You can take it now.
I'll give you mine if we're going to do that.
I've seen Zach Mettenbigler and Florence Dash Jr. and what he can do, and he doesn't scare me. I said before the season, we don't know if Zach Mettenberger is going to be Brody Croll or John David Phillips, and I think we know now. So, you know, he's not the quarterback they thought he was. They have a very good defense and a strong running game, but you know what? So do we, and we have a better quarterback than they do, and we have better receivers than they do. So I think it's going to be our closest game of the year, Blip. Our closest game of the year, but our closest win of the year. And something dramatic would have to happen between now and then for me to change my mind about that stance.
I have a good friend of mine. I've referenced him on the show before. He works in the LSU athletic department, and he sent me a text out of the blue, 24-3, Bama over LSU. And my jaw hit the floor, but the more I think about it, the more I think that could be legitimate. I've seen early lines in the game, Alabama by 9, which on the surface really freaks me out, because it's a night game in Death Valley and LSU is still probably the second most talented team in the country.
Yeah.
But LSU's offense will have a lot of difficulty moving on Alabama's defense. If you want to pull anything from the Tennessee game, Alabama proved that 9 times out of 10 they can guard the outside, and Mettenberger is not Tyler Bray by any stretch of the imagination. And then what are you going to do against the inside beef that is Alabama, either in nickel or in base? That's a hard group to run on. So we'll get into that obviously next week, but I'm with Kerry on that one.
I agree too. I mean, 100%. Let me throw this out at you guys. Is one of the factors for this defense this year, is it a Jesse Williams factor? Because I see him as being maybe one of the most disruptive players that we've ever had playing the nose position. And he's not only being double and triple teamed, but he's getting by these guys and actually getting back into the backfield. What do you think?
Well, Cody was pretty disruptive, but Jesse is in better physical shape than Cody ever was, number one. And number two,
I don't want to change the subject too much. I want to stay on the subject of nose guards. Your boy Brandon Ivory Bird, on that fourth down play, he made his man his bitch. He was, oh, Brandon Ivory, I could have ran out there and hugged him. He looked like, I mean, the future at nose guard. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, back to Jesse. He's Cody without the belly, basically.
He's quick.
And he's getting pretty good at fullback, too.
It's fun to watch them bring him in on that package. But I have to say that the one guy that's glue on the – well, you know, again, Barrett Jones is the kid that if he goes down, I shudder. But as secondarily, on the two kids that I think we can ill afford to lose on defense would be one, Jesse Williams, and then I think Vinny Sinceri as well. I hate to see Vinny without the physical stature, the way he plays football, I just kind of cringe every time he goes in for a tackle because I'm worried that, oh man, I don't want to jinx it. I'm not going to say it, but you know what I'm saying. It just, he seems like he plays with such wild abandon that, something's going to get dislocated somewhere. Luckily, to this point, it's been on the other team and the opposing player.
To go old school, I call Vinny Tommy Wilcox with more speed.
Yes.
But the thing about Vinny, he's a great combination that you don't see that much, Bird. He's a combination of a coach on the field with a nose for the ball. And that's hellified. When you come to what his position is, that's just hell. Hell for the offense.
That's why I think that he is one of those kids that if something, God forbid, were to happen, because he is such a coach on the field, best way to put it, and I agree with you on that, that it would be – it's you just don't replace a player like that because he isn't just out there playing a position. He's helping to orchestrate that defense. And that defense, folks, is fearsome. They are absolutely fearsome. They are racking up, again, gaudy numbers, but I have not heard once from any of the talking heads in the media compare this defense to last year's. And last year's, of course, everybody was running around championing those guys as maybe the greatest defense ever. And not to take anything away from the 2011 team's D. But I tell you, I love this defense, and I love the way they play it.
Me too.
I never thought I would say this, given all the talent that Alabama lost from last year's team, but I'm kind of getting on board with the Alabama's defense maybe just as good as last year's, and that concept really terrifies me because I maintain the 2011 Alabama defense is one of the best of the past 25 years.
But it was. It was, and this one is great. This one hasn't truly been tested like I think it could be in the future. It may not be truly tested until the SEC championship game, because if they play Florida, that tough running game and that quick elusive quarterback will test. But if they play Georgia, Aaron Murray has the ability to get hot, and he does have some good receivers, and he has some good freshman running backs. He has a couple of freshman running backs that are in T.J. Yeldon's league at Georgia. So there may not be a true test until Atlanta and then possibly against Oregon. That would be a test of a different nature because of all the speed at every offensive skill position, including quarterback. But right now, Thomas, there's the body of work right now. It's hard to argue that this is not another great Alabama defense. It is. There's no question that it is. And when they're healthy and when they're executing, they're just hell. I mean, they bring it.
And they are so deep, Kerry. I mean, the thing about this defense is that you've got backups to backups to backups all the way across the board with this defense. And, I'm scratching my head over the body of work comment because, you know, they are shutting people out handily. And it's almost like they physically go into paroxysms of rage whenever they get scored on. I mean, if they get scored on, that's a bunch of pissed off guys on the sideline. They don't like to give up field goal, much less a touchdown. I mean, that is a very proud crew that I feel like they are really, really, really not getting their due in the national press nor in the local press. And I don't, you know, maybe they got to shut out every team between now and the end of the season for everybody to jump on the Bird bandwagon. But man, I'll tell you, I'm impressed with these kids. I love this D.
Well, the thing that's really different this year from last year specifically is the turnovers. Todd Blackledge, you know, we talked about this off air. Todd Blackledge's call against Tennessee, that was spectacular. I mean, he was absolutely right in basically everything he said. Alabama does not beat itself. Alabama makes you make a mistake and doesn't beat itself. And that's a symptom of that. Tennessee gets a little bit of momentum. Bray throws a pick. Or the defense gets a fumble. How many times did the two shutout streak get saved by, oh no, we're going to lose it, oh no, we're going to lose it. Somebody made a big play and Alabama saved the shutout streak. That's been common. Funny stat, Alabama is third in the country, actually tied for second in the country in takeaway ratio. Number one is this weekend with Mississippi State, and Tyler Russell is one of three quarterbacks that has thrown at least 15 touchdown passes and no interceptions. The other two that fell out at Louisiana Tech, which is just blowing up the stat sheet, and Alabama's own A.J. McCarron. So very interesting if we want to spin this into Mississippi State. The comparisons between the teams are actually very cogent, much more than you would think when you just look at it on the surface.
And how exactly do they compare, young Mr. Watts?
I don't want to say favorably. I am not high on Mississippi State. Mississippi State's best win, I've said this once, I'll say it again, was either against Troy or against Tennessee, depending on who you really buy into. And against Troy, Mississippi State's defense gave up 575 yards or something similarly ridiculous. It took turnover luck. You know, turnovers I just mentioned. Lucky bounces and some turnovers beat Troy for Mississippi State. But still, you know, it's something to be said getting to this point undefeated. I don't think they'll stay undefeated because they have Alabama, LSU, and Texas A&M in the next 3 weeks. But the offense has been pretty dynamic. Ladarius Perkins is the starting tailback, and he's averaging 103 yards a game. Anytime you get a back averaging over 100, that's a pretty big deal. And just to talk about Tyler Russell is one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the country. His efficiency rating is 148.59, and he's thrown 15 touchdown passes, and he's completed 60% of his passes, thrown 15 touchdown passes, and he's averaging 225 yards a game. I made myself watch the entire Tennessee-Mississippi State game when they played a couple of weeks ago, and the important things that I noticed were that Tyler Russell can get hot. He got scalding hot in the first half against Tennessee and really carried Mississippi State throughout the first half. He cooled off a little bit, but Mississippi State still put up 41 points. I don't know, like I said, how much of a paper tiger those statistics are because Mississippi State hasn't really played anybody. The defense, though, the defense is an interesting thing that I had to take a lot of time studying. A guy you will hear the commentators gush over the entire night, just mentally prepare yourself for it, is a fellow named Jonathan Banks. He is a cornerback. He's been starting every game since 2010. He's projected to be a first-round pick. If Mississippi State goes man-to-man, Jonathan Banks will be on Amari Cooper every down. And that will be a matchup where, as much as I like Amari Cooper, I think he'll be a little bit overmatched. That said, if Cooper can still consistently get open and beat Banks, that's about as positive a thing as an Alabama fan could hope. Because Banks will be playing next year on Sundays, but Cooper will still be at Alabama. Talking about other people on their defense, and my notes just blew up. Actually, I want to go back to offense real quick and mention a name, Chad Bumpus. Chad Bumpus is a wide receiver. He has – anybody that's followed recruiting knows that Chad Bumpus was a big deal when he came out a few years ago, and Alabama wanted him. He went to Mississippi State, and he holds a bunch of records at this point. So definitely the Bulldog's biggest threat. I'm kind of big on weird stats, so I ask you all to bear with me. Interesting stat, Mississippi State is fourth in total time trailed this season. They've only trailed for 16 minutes. Number one, as we all know, is Alabama with trailing 15 seconds. That stat just really makes me laugh. Alabama does have, or excuse me, Mississippi State does have a bunch of other guys that were preseason award winners or award watch list guys. Josh Boyd, a senior defensive lineman, was all SEC second team or all SEC third team, depending on who you asked. He's had a decent season. He's been a longtime starter. He really benefited over the past year or two playing next to, this name escapes me, the guy who got drafted by the Eagles, Fletcher Cox. That's the guy.
You forget it every week.
I that's why I said it.
I've got a tattoo Fletcher Cox's name on the inside of your palm.
Let's not say we did. That sounds painful. Their best offensive lineman is Gabe Jackson. He was on the early Outland and Rotary Lombardi Award watch list, excuse me. He plays left guard, so definitely somebody that will challenge the aforementioned nose tackle position. And those are the big guys, really. I really like Tyler Russell. I think he's like a mini A.J. McCarron. But, again, I can't get a read on this team because they haven't played anybody. What's going to happen when a team as talented as Alabama or as LSU comes out and punches Mississippi State in the mouth? Because they really haven't been punched in the mouth. The worst that's happened to them is Auburn ran a touchdown back on them and Tennessee played them shot for shot until the end. But that's not the kind of game we're going to get into here. I think Mississippi State statistics are a little inflated, and I think it's going to be a fairly, I think 24, the more I think about it, is a fairly good number. And that's just crazy to me, but it's the absolute truth. I know I'm not the only person that's done all this scouting and shenanigans. What have y'all done? What have y'all got for me?
Well, I have the list of the visitors that are going to be coming to check out the game. Oh, you want to meet? What research I've done on Mississippi State?
You know what?
I watched half of the Tennessee game.
Yeah.
I was a little impressed with Tyler Russell, and I've always thought Chad Bumps was a good player, although he occasionally has the dropsies. And some guy, a receiver whose name I can't even call, made a hell of a one-handed catch in the end zone. That's what I took away from it.
Right. I didn't mean to call you out saying, oh, you didn't do research, I'm going to make you look bad. That was just, you know, I was wondering, you know, what y'all had seen. I will say, in terms of starters, career starts by position, Mississippi State has a fairly balanced team. Two guys on their offensive line have started multiple games. Aforementioned Gabe Jackson, he started 33, so definitely their most experienced offensive lineman. Josh Boyd, who I mentioned, he started 35 games. Bumpus has started 35 games. Tyler Russell's only started 11, but still not awful. He was in that QB competition with Chris Relf over the past couple of years. So it's a fairly veteran team. They're not going to be shocked by the bright lights of Bryant-Denny Stadium or anything ridiculous like that. But at the same time, they haven't played any – this iteration of the Mississippi State team hasn't played anybody. I know I sound like a broken record saying that, but it's the honest truth. So I don't see a scenario where Mississippi State gives Alabama much of a game for four quarters. But if they play out of their minds, they have enough veterans to make the game interesting. That's as far as I'm willing to go.
Is Josh Boyd the cornerback you were talking about?
No, that was Jonathan Banks.
Okay, Banks. Does Banks have eyes in the back of his head?
One would think that because his statistics are really off the charts.
Because Amari Cooper does. One of the things – now, seriously, guys, this weekend when you watch the game and passes that are thrown in Amari's direction, watch his sense for the ball. He will go full tilt down the field and not look back until the ball is right there. Then all of a sudden he puts his hands up. He has a sense for the ball that I have not seen a wide receiver ever have at the University of Alabama.
I've only seen one.
Julio?
Ozzie Newsome.
Ozzie Newsome. I was going to say, it wasn't Julio.
Oh, it wasn't Julio.
No, but Ozzie, you're right. But Ozzie was different in that he was a tight end. I mean, he didn't have the speed that Amari
has. He split out wide a lot, though.
He did.
The first game I ever went to in person as a true freshman at Alabama, as a student, he went up between two Ole Miss guys and brought a ball down, and I thought to myself, damn.
Yeah. But you know what I'm talking about, Kerry. I mean, what I've seen with this kid, and again, I'll challenge Blip and Rock to watch it this weekend as well. Watch his sense for the ball. He doesn't have to look over his shoulder. It's like he's got it. And I don't know if he's on such a wavelength with AJ that he knows, at the 45-yard line, I put my hands up because the ball is going to be at the 48-yard line, and then I'll catch it at the 50. But it's fun to watch because I have not seen a wide receiver, and I stand corrected, Kerry, you're right, Ozzie Newsome.
That's a long time ago, though. And the thing about him, not only does he have an eye for the ball, he has an attitude of, it's my ball.
It's my ball. Yeah. Amari?
You ain't going to take it. I don't care who you are guarding me. If that ball's in the air, it belongs to me, and you're just going to have to deal with it and like it.
I'm afraid that he may make our future NFLer not look that great this weekend because this is a very, very, very talented young man that is about to do his thing. And we'll find out. He'll get tested. We'll find out if he's the real deal. But he's scary good, guys.
Well, one thing about Banks, and this is not meant to take away from his skill set, that matchup could come down to the offensive line. If you've heard it once, you've heard it 1,000 times. Deion Sanders, who might be the best cover corner of all time, can't cover somebody for 5 or 6 seconds. You know, when it gets 5, 6, 7 seconds and the wide receiver is able to run around and try and get open, he's going to get the wide receiver will get open. It's just, I could give you a probability calculation that's just ridiculous. But if the offensive line is able to keep the Mississippi State rushers at bay, Banks is skilled, while very, 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 very good for the college game, can be nullified by the play of someone else. So that's just food for thought.
Well, Amari Cooper's not our only quality wide receiver, guys.
No, he's not.
I think we'll see that this week. Amari may see diminished touches because it's been a couple games in a row now where he's seen 7, 8, 9 looks. We may not throw at Amari quite as much. We may look to get the tight ends more involved. We may get Norwood more involved. We may get Kenny Bell more involved. And one of the nuggets that we've heard from practice this week is that big-time strides have been made by a guy that we've talked about in past shows that, Kerry, I know you and Bird were both very, very impressed with his performance in the spring game, and that's Marvin Shinn. Apparently the coaches have been very, very impressed with Marvin Shinn in the blocking game, and they're talking about involving him more in sort of a I'm totally drawing a blank on the young man's name.
We'll have to tattoo that on the inside of your palm.
Brandon Gibson, yeah. Brandon Gibson had sort of a blocking role as a part of the wide receiver core last year, and they're saying that Shinn may come in, and because of his ability to excel in the blocking aspect of the game, that he may come in and see some minutes similar to Brandon Gibson. So even Shinn may see a couple of looks next week just to try and shimmy away from focusing on Amari, because as hot as he's been, State's going to key on Cooper.
Well, and you didn't even mention Christian Jones or Kenny Bell. And Christian's fighting a little bit of an injury right now, but he's improving. And Kenny seems to have shaken his injuries for now, at least. He looked pretty daggum good against the Vols. So, yeah, okay, Jonathan might shut down Amari, but, we got some other people that can beat you, too. And those are all very good points. And Cyrus Jones is coming on every week, not just as a returner.
I was
going to
say, how about Cyrus back there returning punts? I got a little bit of that old Agent 28 vibe from him. I thought, man, Javi Arenas back there looking really good.
for the first time in a long time, not that I have disagreed with you, but I think you're absolutely bang on. I felt the same way this past weekend. I watched him handle the ball and punch, and did they even kick off? They kicked off once?
Three times. Four times.
Yeah, they didn't kick off that
night. Half, both field goals, and the touchdown.
Okay, that's
they had
right.
13 points, right?
That's right.
They may end up and kick a field goal in the last minute of the game. Oh, we're going to get a score out of this drive.
But Blip, I'm absolutely with you on that. He looked a lot like Javi. He's electric when he touches the ball. He's going to give you, it seems like, an extra 5 to 10 yards. He's got a sense and a nose for where he needs to be with his body versus where the defenders are. So that's such a great segue into taking a break. I think we should go ahead and let's take a quick minute and a half, maybe 2 minute break. You're listening to BAMS Radio. When we come back, we're going to do the players, correct?
Marty ever calls.
Well, Marty.
What I'd like to do is the rest of the visitors list for this game.
I was going to say,
covered all the 13 guys, but there's still some 2014 and 2015 guys coming this week.
Absolutely.
Well, before we go to break, let's remind everybody that it's not just the four of us flapping our gums on the show tonight. We do have open lines if you want to give us a buzz. The phone number is 714-510-3707. Give us a call on BAMS Radio and tell us all about how awesome Bama is from your perspective. We'll be right back after a quick break.
When the boys are out.
Welcome back to BAMS.
United!
Just kidding. Welcome back to BAMS Radio. It's Bird, Blip, CC Bama, and The Rock. Hoping that you'll give us a call and chat us up. 714-510-3707. Bird, did you have a direction you wanted to go in?
Yeah, actually, I was going to make a real quick comment and then hand the puck off to my friend Kerry here. But, you know, it's going to get cold this Saturday night down in Bryant-Denny Stadium. I think that people should have their big coats out. They should be prepared with woolly things on their heads. And the cold weather makes me think of one thing, Blip. And you know what that one thing is?
Pudding?
Really?
Oh, hockey. It's time for Alabama hockey, Alabama Frozen Tide hockey. Which the yours truly and the Blip will be broadcasting live from the Pelham Civic Center when Alabama Frozen Tide takes the ice. And literally, they have already started play. They're playing away from here. I think the first home game or match is going to be in January, if I'm not mistaken. But looking forward to seeing the Frozen Tide back out and Coach Q and yet another our championship Frozen Tide. Let's put it that way, because of course those guys did a fabulous job of representing Alabama and took care of business in the SEC. So looking
yeah,
forward,
they, They've already pulled off a fairly big time upset, I think, anyway, beating Georgia Tech.
Huge upset. No, that's not a big time. That's a huge upset. This team, and we're gonna. I'm not gonna harp on it, but I am going to at least make a quick commentary that understand something, folks. They are not scholarship players. They are down here from all over parts of the United States, playing hockey for the love of it. Very, very talented kids that couldn't get scholars elsewhere, and they are beating some of these teams that have got full-on scholarships, that have got full-on programs, that are, you know, part of actual, you know, intercollegiate hockey leagues, whereas this is a club sport for Alabama, and they are competitive with anybody they take the ice with. So it's if you've never been to a hockey game, make it, put it on your calendar to at least kind of follow our lead and come on down to the Pelham rink. You will be amazed at the quality of skating you see and the level of competition that these guys put forth. So yeah, that Georgia Tech was a huge win, Blip. Huge upset.
Not this weekend, but next they go up to East Lansing, Michigan, and they got to play Michigan State, and that's a good hockey club.
Oh, you know what? If they don't lose, you know, by five goals, then I would consider that, I hate to say, a moral victory. And I know they certainly aren't looking for any moral victories, but that is the best of the best they're about to strap on with the ice. So when do they play in Huntsville? Have they already played up in Huntsville?
They've already played in Huntsville. That's, in fact, they beat Georgia Tech in Huntsville.
Okay, that was in Huntsville. All right.
Yeah, and then so they've got they play at Vandy this weekend up in Nashville. Following weekend up in East Lansing, and they play Grand Valley State, Davenport, and then Michigan State. And then on the 9th and 10th of November, they'll be home against Florida Gulf Coast and Arkansas. So really, the first true home game will be the first full weekend of November.
Okay, so it is the first weekend of November, and that's not that far off. That's only about 3 weeks off.
Yeah.
Listen, I know that how our football listeners love to hear us prattle about baseball, basketball, and hockey, but since we do have a vested interest in this particular club, and it is a fun program, let's go ahead and get back to football, and we have got a not special guest, but one of my favorite callers. Marty, how are you tonight? Welcome to BAMS.
Hey, guys. How's the best minds of Bama football in the nation doing tonight?
We're sucking up over here. Did you ever see the movie Pretty Woman with Julia Roberts?
Oh, yes.
The scene where he takes her down to Rodeo Drive and the snooty little guy at the dress shop kind of ignores her because she looks like she's dressed like a prostitute, and he looks at her and says, "More sucking up over here." Well, that's kind of what I'm saying to you. Yeah, more sucking up over here.
Hey, I hadn't been able to listen all night, so I hope I don't repeat something or anything. But you know, I was kind of looking today the Mississippi State record with Alabama, and I may be wrong what I found, but isn't the record like Alabama's 176 and Mississippi State's 113 and tied 3? Is that true?
I think you're right.
That is absolutely correct. Good call.
I mean, I believe I could, you know, they could win every game the rest of my life and yours too, and they still couldn't tie that record, could they?
No.
That's remarkable. I just didn't realize it was that lopsided. I guess I had to suffer through that 10-year period of time where I just kept my head down all the time, didn't pay attention, because I didn't realize we beat them that many times in a row.
That was Sly Croom's claim to fame, and I don't know what other people feel about Sly, but I love the guy. I've always been a huge Sly Croom fan. I don't know if he's the best coach in the world, but I think he's a good human being, and I think he's a very, very good coach. But, of course, we lost 2 years in a row to Mississippi State under Sly. And, of course, that meant a whole lot to him personally. But it was hard-fought games, and that's out of those few games that they won, two of those, a high percentage of those goes to Professor Croom. So, anyway, just thought I'd shout that out. Well, you know what, Marty? we have got Kerry sitting here literally chopping at the bit unless you got something else for us to give you your participation chart.
No, if I do, I can talk to it after he gets through, if you don't mind.
He could push us right up to the end of the show. He's giving me the evil eye. I'm going to let you two have at it. I'm going to go on mute. I'm going to let you two guys go down with each other.
And what I say would actually be interesting. But here we go. Marty, they only played 52 guys due to the nature of the rivalry, I guess. But Alabama started on offense with Michael Williams at tight end, Cyrus Quanjo left tackle, Chance Wormack left guard, Barrett Jones at center, Anthony Steen right guard, DJ Fluker right tackle, Christian Jones in the slot, Amari Cooper and Kevin Norwood at receiver, A.J. McCarron at quarterback with Eddie Lacy at halfback. Defensively, pretty much the same group. Ed Stinson at end, Jesse Williams at nose guard, Damian Square at end, Adrian Hubbard at Sam linebacker, Trey DePriest in the middle, Nico Johnson at the wheel, Xavier Dixon at the jack. Again, the best linebacker on the team, C.J. Mosley, supposedly didn't start the game if this chart is accurate. The jack linebacker, Xavier Dixon, cornerbacks, Deion Ballou and D. Milner, safeties, Robert Lester and Nick Perry. According to this, they started in the basic formation, which they don't always do that. Off the bench, Alabama brought John Fulton. They brought Tanae Patrick. They brought Nathan McAllister in late in the game. They call him White Lightning. He's a very fast wide receiver, a walk-on, number 24. They brought in Cody Mandel, of course, to punt. Sinceri came in at safety very quickly. T.J. Yeldon had a monster game. Carson Tinker continued to snap on the money. You had Jeremy Shelley kicking the ball. You had Blake Sims at quarterback. Ha-ha Clinton Dix, the other number six at defensive back. You had Kenny Bell at receiver. Jeffrey Pagan at defensive end. Cyrus Jones at kick returning and wide receiver. Quentin Dial on the line. Bradley Sylvan secondary on special teams. Kenyon Drake playing on some offense late in the game and looking pretty good. You had Reggie Ragland. You had Brent Callaway. Got his first couple of carries at Alabama at running back there at the end of the game. You had Geno Smith coming in on special teams and secondary. Landon Collins, same thing. Damian Duvall at jack linebacker. Kelly Johnson at H-back. C.J. Mosley at whatever linebacker he wanted to play. Tyler Hayes, special teams and linebacker. Cade Foster kicking. Actually struggled a little bit. First time in a long time Cade has struggled, but he did that game. You had D.J. Pettway at defensive end. Brandon Ivory, we mentioned earlier, blew up that fourth down play. He was in the game at the same time as Jesse Williams on short yardage. I thought that was pretty cool. Marvin Shinn at receiver. And before I forget, at some point this season, guys, we're going to see some kind of little special play from Marvin when he lines up at tight end. I don't have all the details, but I'm telling you it's coming. You had the other Jones, that would be Harrison, at H-back late in the game and actually ran a kickoff back. I thought that was funny because I think they teach him to fair catch those balls. But Harrison said, no, I'm going to run this back. And then you had Ryan Vogelrit played tight end and H-back both. So only 52 guys, first time it's been under 60 this year, Marty, but still a good night for the Alabama Crimson Tide and their reserves.
Hey, guys, you know your team's good when you start watching the football game to see the backups come in the second half. And then you've seen them so much that you started seeing improvement in how the backups are playing. That's just amazing, you know, to have a football team that every week you can watch the backups come in and just improve. It's amazing. And, you know, another statistic that just blows my mind, and I don't know that I've ever seen this either is the balance of Alabama's passing and rushing yards or attempts or whatever. I mean, I think it's like 1,548 rushes or to 1,538 passes. Is that just not remarkable? I mean, I hadn't seen an Alabama team like that in years and years. Have you?
They've totally got balance. It's 219 point something a game to 220 point something. It's unbelievable. And, you know, Marty, I just noticed something. This is something that you run into when you depend on the road team or the home team, rather. When you're the road team, you depend on the home team to do the participation chart. I just noticed that the Tennessee Media Relations Group neglected to publish the fact that Alabama did put in the backup offensive line at the end of the game. So there was Chad Lindsey, and there was Ari Quanjo, and there was Ryan Kelly, and there was Austin Shepherd, and Kellen Williams, they all got into the game too. The folks that made the depth chart, the participation chart, just basically missed that. But I did see the second string offensive line come in the last series or two. So actually, I'm going to say that 57 guys played in Knoxville. I think the Alabama coaching staff corrects that when they do the game film, by the way.
So. I tell you, the dividends will pay off on that, I tell you, next year. That's just you just can't get that kind of experience any other way.
I think it helps us in recruiting, too, Marty, because you can point back, you know, these guys came in and I heard about six true freshmen named just then, and I thought, yeah, okay, there's a true freshman, and you can point back to them and go, yeah, you know, you come in, if you're everything you're cracked up to be, you're going to make the field this year. You're going to play.
Yeah. Yeah, just watching those freshmen excel like they are, Cooper, Jones, Yalen, I mean, that just speaks volume out there, you know. It just puts to rest all those negative recruiting things that people said about Alabama. If you go to Alabama, you're going to ride the bench for 2 years. I mean, they just can't say that no more. It's amazing.
Yeah, the proof's on the field.
That's exactly right. Hey, if Thomas is still on or whoever could answer this, what's the percentage rate that you think that we could land Robert Foster? I've been hearing some good things that at first I heard that he's wanting to stay home, but now I think I heard an interview with his head coach that said that home is not necessarily meaning that he'll stay in Pittsburgh or whatever. He's visiting this weekend. Is that true?
That is correct. Distance is always a factor with a kid coming from that far. But everything I've heard is if he decides to go away from home, which would be Pitt, he's coming to Alabama. The fact he's getting on campus with an official visit is a pretty big deal. And it gives the coaches a decent chance to close him. Am I willing to say that it'll happen? No, but I'm saying there is a good chance. That's as far as I will go with that.
Thomas, I wonder if it's – I think he is closed. I think the young man wants to come to Alabama. I wonder if the official this weekend is not an opportunity for the staff to close Mama. I think if we can sell Mama on the idea that, you know, we understand that – your boy's going to be – it's not like you can hop in the car and drive from Pennsylvania down to Tuscaloosa. So she's going to have to feel pretty stinking comfortable with our staff and their ability to ensure his safety and well-being. And I feel pretty good about our chances in doing that. I think that I think Robert himself is sold on playing for Bama, and the way we're slinging the ball around right now with A.J. – it doesn't hurt us at all. I mean, Amari's performance on the field certainly gives a young man like Robert Foster a lot to smile about when thinking about the prospect of playing at Alabama. That's a great question, and thanks for the call, Marty.
Well,
one thing about that, too, that I think is pretty amazing, too, for him to come here, the exposure that Alabama gets on TV. I mean, it's almost every game is on TV. I mean, you know, I guarantee you every game for Pittsburgh up there or wherever, Pitt is not on TV. I may be wrong, but, I mean, she can still watch every game, the ones that she can't come to. That's pretty amazing.
Well, just an addendum on a different recruit. I don't mean to steal your call here, but we mentioned parents needing to be sold. I think Laramie Tunsil's parents, if they come with his official visit, if the staff sells Laramie's parents, Laramie comes to Alabama. I think that's where his recruitment is at. And you want to talk about a big get? Alabama needs more big-time offensive tackles, even if you redshirt him and give him a year to develop. But anyway, just a little segue mentioning parents.
Yeah, I think I feel good about him. I think Henry and Walker is really pulling him hard, and I think they're going to win him over. I really do.
I think it's great that Henry has already said that even though he's already had his unofficial, but he's going to take his official, excuse me. Derek Henry is going to take an unofficial the same weekend that Laramie Tunsil takes his official so they can hang out. Also, that's really great to hear. The only thing that excites me more is that his parents are coming with him. So the parents and Derek both, I like Alabama's chances.
Yeah.
Y'all need to remind me when we have more time one time. 1 week when things are a little slow, remind me to tell you the story of how Saban talks to recruits before the game in his makeshift office in Bryant-Denny. It's really, it takes a while to tell it, but it's really a unique part of our
football. Oh, I'd love to hear that. Hey, I'm curious to know, this is one of those fact or fiction questions for you guys. There was a reportedly, the Chicago Tribune has been investigating, and this is one of the reasons that that Troopy Doopy has been taken off the road as a recruiter down at the Plains. Trooper Taylor recruited an offensive lineman from the Chicago area named Jordan Diamond, and pretty hefty rumor mill going right now. In fact, it started this afternoon. Somebody from the Chicago Tribune posted on a message board that that Jordan Diamond has admitted to family and friends that he took $50,000 to sign with Auburn. And a lot of people were looking at his recruitment and going, why would a kid from Chicago sign with Auburn? You know, why isn't he looking at Ohio State or you know, any of the schools in the Big Ten that are close to home? And why Auburn? So we all know that Trooper's been taken off the road and that they're not letting him recruit right now. We all know the NCAA is sniffing around down there. I wonder if there's a connection from this rumor to that story. So have any of you guys heard anything? Is this just is this somebody trolling our fan base, trying to get our hopes up again, or is there some actual fire to the smoke on Jordan Diamond?
I know it's all over the message boards.
I'm not going to put this one to bed. I am going to say hold off. That is a very damning accusation, but until there's some kind of proof, it's just another floating rumor. Do I think it's possible? Sure. But unless the Chicago Tribune guy basically has the kid saying that, it's going to be real tough to prove.
Yeah.
So,
well, just for those of you who enjoy the rumor mill, boy, that's a strong one. The rumor that Gene Chizik was fired earlier in the week seems to have been debunked. Not saying it's not going to happen at the end of the season, but right now it looks like that was pure speculation. The rumor about Coach Gruden coming to Tennessee, that one kind of seems like wishful thinking on the part of the Vol family. But of the three major rumors out there right now, this Jordan Diamond story seems to have the most potential to legitimately get wheels on the ground.
Well, you know, there's got to be something to it, because it is true fact that Trooper's been took off the recruiting trail. Is that correct? I mean, I've heard that is true.
That's confirmed.
You don't take your best recruiter off the recruiting trail unless there's something stinky in Denmark. I mean, you just don't – I don't think so.
No, I mean, they don't. You don't do that for yucks.
Well, guys, we are about – go ahead, Marty.
You know, I've got to take my shot in down at Auburn, though. You know, if you need some toilet paper, you know, go to Auburn. They're having a big sale this weekend. They are overstocked down there with toilet paper. It's running out their nose. They need to get rid of it. So you can pick you up some good bargains down there on some toilet paper down at Auburn if you want to go down there.
I think they're just eco-conscious. They're just trying to save the trees. That's why they're losing every game, so they don't kill those trees.
They thank sure gave it a year off. You know, something that was funny to me, and I'm not making light of injured animals at all, but something that was funny to me, I guess because I've never seen it before, was when I was covering the Iron Bowl last year, we happened to take a wire rope route, and there is actually a building on the outskirts of the Auburn campus where they take care of injured horses. The name of this building is the Center for Lameness. It's the sign right there, University of Auburn, Center for Lameness.
And with that, we bid you a good night. We are about 30 seconds away from being off the air, and as always, we appreciate everybody's calls. We appreciate you as listeners. And don't get complacent this weekend. By gosh, stand up, yell like it's the first game of the year, because this is the Crimson Tide, and we are headed to championship number 15. And a big Roll Tide to all of us. Roll Tide, roll.
Roll Tide, guys.
Thanks, Marty. We have a couple of seconds, so whatever you want to riff on, go.
Okay. Shout out to the basketball team. They'll be having a scrimmage from 3 to 4:30 at Coleman Coliseum Saturday afternoon before the football game. All fans come by and check out the freshman Devontae Pollard and the improved rest of the team.
And come by the BAMS tent, say hello to us. We'll be there with bells on.